Actually, again, it's a pleasure to be here, and basically it was worth coming here for the last few days of talks and in the morning, right? So it was great. But so I definitely wanted to come here, whether or no weather. But then a boy said, well, give a talk, right? And I really panicked, because you know, what do I have to say about growth, death, and aging? So Boris wrote back, doesn't ease growth? So I agree it does, so. Right. But anyway, I was almost, thinking of giving my CAN talk on transcription factor binding sites, and then as the day of departure came closer, I realized that many of you have heard the talk multiple times. And I guess Marco and Boris have been collaborators in some of those projects. So I decided to do something flaky, which is to talk about something that has an overlap with the program title, but it is something that I kind of think about on and off. And the temptation of giving the talk here is that there are some people here who know far more about apoptosis than I know. I'm just learning about it. And hopefully there are a few people there who know far more about evolutionary dynamics than I do. So it's a very good place to get feedback. Don't be too cruel. Okay, and I can figure out at the end of it, there's no hope. So, at the end, at least I can decide whether it's worth pursuing or not. Okay, so as you can guess from the title, the question is that if I have programmed cell left, especially in unicellular organisms, what stops somebody from cheating, like getting all the benefit from death of others, but not dying itself? Right? This is the question we'll sort of we'll take up, and what you'll see why this is not a completely useful question. Okay? So I'm broadly interested in questions that try to bridge the gap we're talking about yesterday between sort of evolutionary theory and systems biology.
Is that the same guy 30 years later?
You don't know him? Okay, so as sort of pictures, I put sort of a fitness landscape with arbitrarily complicated looking functions and put still right down there, and here is sort of the other end, the systems biology picture of lambda, and this is a picture of you know who, right? And at this moment, these two subjects hardly actually talk to each other. Okay, is that a market?
Who is that?
Okay, right. Okay, doesn't matter, the joke crashed. Okay, so basically, it's on one hand, you have models where there is sort of an abstract fitness, an abstract landscape, and you have sort of random what's happening there. And then there are models which are biochemically detailed. And it'd be nice to find a few examples where the biochemical model, or at least the quantitative biochemical model, have something to do with the definition of fitness, right? Now this happened in some problems, right? One of the problems that Marco Boris and I played with some time back about evolution of regulatory elements, you can do it to some extent, so it was fun to do that. There has been a few works where RNA folding has been studied that way, but there are not that many examples where a model of the network, that detail ever matters, right? But I think what's happening is that there are all kinds of evolutionary dynamics questions that have been discussed in the past, and we are discovering now how many of those things happen. I would try to convince you that program cell death is one of those examples where we are getting to know more and more details of the thing, and it's a good time to put the two things back together, right? I haven't quite achieved this, but sort of see, okay, what can we learn about evolutionary strategies, right, with a verified model of how biochemistry works there, right? So to briefly introduce my subject, we have talked about apoptosis mostly in multicellular organisms so far, right? And at least in us, tumor cells dying is a good thing, because for us, continuation of the germline is what matters, right? So although there are these examples, right, of smaller animals having apoptosis only in the germline, so to think about it. Apoptosis isn't such a confusing thing, okay? But apoptosis in single-cell organisms is sort of a strange thing, right? Why would a single cell ever commit suicide, right? And but I just tried to give you an example that you know, there are well-known ones, examples, and not so the examples that are coming up now. It seems like some kind of programmed cell death is all over the unicellular world. So this example is something well known. Many of you have heard about ichthyocelium. If you have this free-living amoeba and you're in starvation condition, they get together, right? They make this very exciting looking sort of stalk and spore structure. Spores get to spread, stalks die, right? And you kind of ask yourself, why not? We get the whole population polluted by dicti that only wants to be spores, right? Here are two examples from bacteria, this is from Subtilis, where it seems like when you are in starvation condition, there is sort of an epigenetic switch. God only knows what that is. But some start turn on these four agents and then delay sporulation, send out killer toxin to other cells, and they die. Hopefully you get some nutrients from there.
But the other cells don't send out killer signals.
Right, so it seems like there's a dimorphism. Okay, yeah, some kind of epigenetic dimorphism happens. Okay, it's sort of being worked out, I'm not fully sure. But yeah, the other cells don't.
There's always a kind of competition, right?
Right, no, but this is not, there is no genetic difference. So it will happen every time, right? So it is one of these arguments. I mean, the standard argument would be this way, some can survive, rather than everybody doing badly. Okay, right? Here is a system from E. coli. It's one of those toxin-antitoxin systems. So we know of many examples, I don't know, people know, of plasmids or something which has the toxin and antitoxin, the antitoxin being less stable than the toxin, and if you get rid of the plasmid, then because the toxin is more stable, you die, so they actually parasitize it. But people have started to find this type of system in the chromosome now, right? So many things, if you regulate the toxin and the antitoxin differently, you can get cell death. And it seems in E. coli, phage infection, oxide sort of stress, various kinds of stress situations cause death, right? And the answer is why. And this picture, you can hardly figure out what it is about yeast. I'll have a bigger picture about yeast. Here is this strange situation of sex and death, where these are haploids who have mated with others. They are alive and happy. And the poor guys who could not mate have committed suicide. So the black thing is sort of some marker that tells you that they are going through the yeasty version of apoptosis. Okay? So it turns out that the pheromone, yeast pheromone, is toxic if you stay on for a long time. If you manage to mate, you are happy, you save yourself, otherwise you die. Right? And again, sort of the standard molecular biologist argument strikes, which is that this is good for the species, right? Now, because, well, you give your body for nutrients for others, or you do something, you know, the whole community survives, right? And if you ever have sort of one of these discussions happening, and if you know an evolutionary biologist, most of us don't maybe, sort of sitting in the board, they will sort of hiss under their breath. Group selection argument, that is sort of the utter condemnation of anything, right? So what is this group selection business? Well, it has sort of a longish history. So around 1962, there was a book by Wayne Edwards, who was an ecologist, and who sort of noted that in forests, maybe birds under some conditions, lower their reproduction rate. Or, you know, there are animals who sort of, to save others, commit suicide or something, put themselves up for danger, right? And he sort of said that maybe, you know, Darwinian, he sort of realized this sort of goes contrary to Darwinian dynamics, but he was sort of trying to say, maybe there is some selection at the group level. Now, there is something strange that happened within 4 or 5 years of it. There was sort of, so most sort of orthodox Darwinians bristled at the idea. They sort of said, how can you not, how this is sort of fake argument. Right, it sounds good, but it's not true. And then there's this sort of famous book by Lord C. Williams. Apparently, most people don't read it, but they quote it very well. I have tried to read it, and I can't quite find the killer argument. But if any of you have read it and understood it, please help me. Right, it's on grouse sitting somewhere. Okay, but he basically beat this guy to pulp, so much so that today you can find this on Amazon, but this guy's book you can never find. I even have a copy of this. Right. So he won the battle, hands down. So since I haven't fully understood why Sir Williams was so upset, let me try to propose my own argument why one should worry about this group selection argument. Yes.
So, just in all the earlier examples that you gave, these were all uniform. The population was actually genetically identical.
Well, so you got actually where I'm going to. Okay, just wait for a second. Okay. You have a better example, right? So okay. The obvious problem is problem of mixed populations. Well, as a group, okay, strategy X looks like much better than strategy Y if the groups are homogeneous. What if they're a mixed population? So you can always ask if one group, a member of the group, invades the other, or worse, by mutation generates in a group of good guys, there's a bad guy, right? What would happen? Would the bad guy take over or not? So there is sort of, so this is what our worry is, that slowly the good guys will keep dying and the bad guys would grow, and maybe they will wipe it out, maybe not, we don't know. Okay, we have to work out all kinds of fitness conditions before we know what happens. And so the problems of this generic type has been discussed a lot. Okay, so I guess what are the 70s onward, there's been a, what have I done? Right, there are sort of a lot of work, Price and Maynard Smith and others, who have sort of analyzed situations where fitness of somebody depends on the population structure, and then try to figure out whether something is stable or something is not stable. Here is a sort of famous example, it's called the hawks and the doves, right? Now of course, real hawks and real doves, that's not how the story works out, but these are kind of metaphors for a situation where there are two-person conflicts happening, okay? Are there people that will back off in a fight or not, right? And it was meant to explain observations that animals who are very heavily armed quite often do lots of display, like, I'm going to kill you, man, right? But then usually back off, never quite engage into battle to death, okay? The truth is, doves put into very, 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 confined region would battle to death because they're never prepared, okay, for that situation, right? But almost all heavily armed, okay, animals never fight, okay, or rarely fight to that extent, right? And Maynard Smith and I think Price, but Maynard Smith sort of popularized it seriously, put it into some kind of game theory perspective. And the idea is that, think of the situation a hawk meets a hawk, okay, a dove meets a dove. Well, one of the doves, suppose there is a fitness game to be made, you get some food or a mate or something like that. And the game is G, right? So if I meet a dove, well, maybe I'll back off or the other dove will back off, okay? So our average game is G/2, right? If I meet a hawk, I have no chance. I lose, right? I get zero. So basically, your average gain for the dove is if x is the fraction of hawks, it's 1 minus x g/2. The hawk, if it meets a dove, it's very happy, but unfortunately, if it meets a hawk, it might get hospitalized, so there is an additional cost of c, right? So if you take this model and work out the conditions, right, it turns out, you can kind of write down the dynamics of growth in terms of this matrix, blah, 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 sort of all very standard. You get two kinds of situations to cut the chase, right? If you have a huge cost, right, of a conflict between two hawks, then what happens is that as a function of the fraction of hawks you have, well, doves kind of falls from G/2 to zero. All doves, you get G/2 on the average. All hawks, one dove, poor guy is kind of in trouble, right? It goes down to zero. Hawks, among many, many doves, of course, gets a gain of G, right? But as the number of hawks increases, its fitness decreases, and if it's a huge cost there, it will go to G/2, right? So if C is large enough, it will meet somewhere, right? So what would happen is that if, depending upon how big the cost is, there will be an optimal fraction, okay, of hawks. So hawks, one hawk among many doves, it will grow because it's gaining everywhere, right? But as the number of hawks build up, the gain reduces and reduces and reduces and you stop something. So this is sort of a famous example. It works out that, that optimum point is G/C, so where the costs are huge, you have it. So if these things are like that, the fraction of hawks would be very small, right? So it is very dangerous to have a conflict, you have very, this is sort of standard, how many years old? 30 years old, more than 30 years old. Right? Now the example that I'm sure would be a footnote in that same discussion that is somewhat relevant to us, is that what if the cost isn't so high? Okay? Right? In that case, you don't cross. Right? So what would happen is that hot stiffness in any composition is higher than the than this, right? So if I introduce a hop, it will wipe out all the doves. It will be hops only, right? But look, the pure population of doves has better, right, thickness, right, than the pure population of hops per person, right? So what happens is that you push it up there, you kind of go there, right? So in this case, the, you know, the game theory blah blah version would be that the pure strategy, the hop strategy, is evolutionarily stable against the dove strategy, although it's a shitty place to be. Okay? Right? So if such a situation happens, you actually wiped out the good policy, which is to help each other. Right? And it's been a problem in game theory, people have known for a long time how to get cooperation, and I'm sure they've been going to conferences in the 80s and 90s saying how they can get cooperation. And they have sort of decided these are end ways of getting it. But it's sort of something similar is very relevant to this problem in the following sense. Well, I sort of talked about the hop-dove problem and there's two layer conflicts. But in here, it's like all kinds of species are there. And it's not quite one east meets another east and has a battle. They are dumping something to the solution around. So it's to first approximation, both of them see the same medium. So this most probably some mean field theory of n-player games, but who wants to think of it this way, right? So imagine the following situation happens, that I have a wild type, right, and I have a mutant, and as the nutrient levels change, the thickness, sort of the growth rate minus the death rate, changes. But suppose the terrible thing happens that the mutant always dies less often, okay, than the wild type, even at lower nutrients. And if I mix it, this is kind of a nonlinear version of this picture turned the other side around. So now nutrients depend on x by some complicated differential equation, but all we need to do is to keep track of the nutrient levels. Right? And in those circumstances, actually a mutant would wipe things out. Right? So this seems like, okay, trivial and okay, but a recent bunch of papers who are looking at apoptosis in yeast, and again, there are worms, worm people and fly people will come and tell you maybe apoptosis in yeast is not quite genuine, but after all we have a caspase, right? So the thing is that, you know, quite a bit is known about apoptosis-like response in yeast. There seems to be a yeast caspase. If you take off that yeast caspase, under many conditions of starvation or things, you don't see death, or death happens much later, right? So there seem to be actually mutants which would play the same game, right? And the interesting thing is that someone tried to do this experiment of mixing two different types of things and see what happens, right? So what seems to happen is the following. So I'm sorry, I should have cropped something out, but this is like you put together in a solution, okay, half wild type, half the caspase mutant, and see as you go on what fraction of the population is caspase mutant and what fraction is wild type. And you can do that by having two different plates. One causes apoptosis, so you know, one grows on that, the caspase mutant grows on both. Okay? And something very funny happens. First, the caspase number grows, the caspase mutant grows. So you think, they are going to take over. But then their population, the fraction seems to crash back to zero. So it's something that, you know, I don't fully understand. I think it's a bad idea to just based on this one thing to jump and start doing theory, but it may be a good idea to formulate the questions appropriately. So you can actually read the paper, and at the bottom of the paper, everybody has to make a story of what they have learned out of this experiment, and there is the following story, which is related to the other topic of this conference, which is aging, right? So what they say is that, well, maybe this is not such a homogeneous two-population thing. There is an age structure, right? So basically, their argument with lots of wishful thinking goes as follows, that, well, you most probably can't see it, but I can sort of vaguely explain this, that there are some internal structure to the population. So there is aging, let's say, like we've heard a lot about aging, right? So there's an age axis now, or it could be an age plus damage axis. Okay, bad protein inside axis, right? So what's happening is that there is, you're starting with the good guy and the bad guy. Both of them AIDS, okay, so they spread out. Now, if for some reason the death rate as a function of age or damage is higher in the wild type or than the mutant, what would happen is that you get a distribution of wild types, and the distribution of mutants, the age distribution, would be slightly skewed, right? Mutants that don't die so easily would have more fraction of their population that are older, right, compared to the wild type, okay, right? So in that case, so then they sort of came back and said, whoa, maybe they are putting something in the solution that kills the older ones, or rather helps the younger ones, and maybe that would be the solution, right? And and they have done some experiments like that, which is sort of now very common, that, you know, something like that, you take out the supernatant, you dump it on age culture, see whether the age culture survival, and something like that happens. They don't quite know whether the young versus the old gets any benefit, but they just theorize, right? Now, you can sort of take this seriously, try to make a model, okay? And I was sort of trying to say something very trivial, which is that if you lay a certain number of restrictions on the model, that doesn't do the job, okay? Why? So I'm sort of trying to mathematize it by saying Xi's are the abundance for different ages for the good guys, Y are the abundances for the other guys. The rate at which you make this transition, I'm assuming that will be the same, right? And S vector is the, all the chemicals in the substrate, right? But I'm sort of going to take the death rates of the mutant to be less than the death rate of the good guys, right? And then there's a very complicated, you know, how as a function of X and Y you get substrate generation. You could write down some equation like that. The point is that anything of you can actually convince yourself. Anything, any equations of this type, if you started with equal population distribution, would never have, okay, the Y type survive. Okay, it will be the bad guy taking work. And the reason of this is that although in probability distribution it looks like that the wild type is biased towards younger age and the other one is biased the other way, in the total number there is always more mutants in any age category compared to the wild type. Okay? Right? And you can, right, sorry.
So won't you explain the observation by assuming that in the mutant, they indeed live longer,
yes,
but they tend to produce more more offspring are deleterious to the mutant, so that they're not viable. So that the so that they may over their lifespan produce right. more, but they produce less actual viable things in the same amount
right.
of time.
So I think it, maybe it's better to state it the other way around, which is to sort of say that. Okay, let me just skip this and sort of say that what are the alternatives, right? What are the ways out of this, right? One of them is what you said, is that in some way or the other what you are saying is that mutants have a fitness deficit if it is not fitness by the next generation, fitness over the long range, right? So what you are saying is that any mutant you get would be deficient in some way in fitness, right? That's one solution, right? That's one way everything can be stable, right? There is a second solution, which is that these guys generate mutant-specific poisons. Every time there is a new mutant, it has actually seen that before, and therefore it can sort of, you know, somehow sense that and put in poisons in the medium that will kill each of these mutants, right? That's a way of effectively lowering the fitness in a substrate-dependent way.
You're saying the wild type is doing that?
Say the wild type does. That's one kind of mechanism that looks very ugly to me. But biology has no problem being ugly if it works. Right. Then there is a third kind of option, which is like cells bunched together can actually benefit from each other more. So if I secrete something, the other cells which are just divided off me close by, okay, could benefit more than me. Okay, compared to the guys who are stuck to the other, the bad guys, right? So this, you know, some evolutionary biology, I don't quite know. It sounds to me like more like the skin selection type thing, okay? But it might work out, right?
They don't stir.
Right. So my purpose of doing this, okay, so let me just list that and I come to exactly what you're saying. Like, oh no, maybe nothing is stable. I mean, one always gets new mutations. So you can always generate a new mutation which will not kill the apoptotic pathway, but actually become, you know, somebody who can survive under that circumstance. you know, they should, they may have tried it. There are reports of other experiments when you push them through that kind of bottleneck, okay, come out to be a different mutant, which can, under those circumstances, survive because it metabolizes things still better, right? But not drop the apoptotic pathway, right? So anyway, so the important thing, of course, it looks like, okay, this theory not goes nowhere. You like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and maybe I've missed some others, okay? List of possibilities. What is important about this type of a list is that each of these are experimentally testable. So one of them you said is that what if we shake them, or if we do it in the medium when they don't clump together? So at least if water sticks less than in some other medium, right? So you can arrange so that the what is being secreted is mixed much better, right? So that there's no local effect so much. Okay, or you can separate them and do things. There is, for example, if things are becoming mutants, you can definitely pick out what you've done, and you can do all kinds of crossing experiments to see whether there are two, okay, there's really a mutant. What you got is different from what it was before, right? Okay. Similarly, each of these, if you have a set of mutants, you can test each of these because you can compete this with one kind of mutant. You can take out the supernet and dump it on the other type of mutant and see what happens, right? And if mutants have fitness deficit, you don't have to do competition experiments. Okay, you can actually run them over a long time by themselves, and you'll see that effect. Right? So all I'm saying that if you give me a set of mutants, then experimentally one can very easily tell whether any of these have been the reasons. Right? So for what you said, this is right, that you know YCA later on doesn't produce anything viable. Just by observing YCA mutants carefully, one should be able to say that. Right? So anyway, this is very much rougher in edges than what you guys are talking about, but I think I should kind of conclude, which is that in one way, evolutionary game theory and population dynamics has been sort of discussed and you know beaten to death, decades back. So on one hand, you don't want to enter there because everything on earth most probably has been discussed. On the other hand, you know, the recent developments in program cell death really ought to be put in that language, right? And what's happening is that someone does some very interesting work, and then in the discussion section they come, and then they provide a kind of just-so theory so that the referees are happy, right? And happily produce arguments that, you know, one group is better than the other because it's so good for the whole community, right? So, and especially when they are doing competition experiments, right? So one has to sort of think about mixed populations and observe these growth dynamics very carefully or death dynamics very carefully to be able to say which of these mechanisms work. And hopefully, that's my hope, that if you think about this, in the long term, the gap between evolutionary theory and biological mechanism would narrow. We are very far from there, but you know, that's my hope. So anyway, thanks for listening to it patiently.
So your conclusion was that this idea that you know if the thing there's creating something that happened beyond that couldn't explain.
So I think I didn't quite know how to present it. To present these alternatives and then say what is the constraint on the models or not. So I think to be more concrete, you can state a bunch of monotonicity conditions, which means the following. Okay, suppose there is less substrate, right? Or something in the medium. Okay? If it is mutant blind, then what's going to happen is that if without that thing in the medium, the death rates were, you know, one was higher than the other, okay, as I add the substrate, you don't change the order. You can push them to any other value. As long as you don't change the order in which the death rates and growth rates were, right, you are fine. Now, you can, of course, if you make a toxin that you particularly kill that mutant, of course, you can push this the other way around. So if you hit some other thing, aging, and aging was same in both, okay, then there is no. If you have aging becoming accelerated in mutants, that's equivalent to having a fitness deficit, right? So if you don't have a special fitness deficit to the mutant, it could be all of them have a fitness deficit, okay? And you are sending things to the medium by very, very complicated mechanisms that are species or strain blind, right? That is, they don't upset the orderings of growth rates or death rates, okay? Only pulls them down or up together, right? Then you never, by inventing more structure to the population, okay, manage to yeah, overwrite it.
I'd love to try to take your assumptions and put them on their head.
Okay.
The opposite way. I'd like to talk about a situation which is real, I think, where group selection is a good thing for the group, where mutation is very important and welcomed by the group rather than poisoned by the group, and where that has an important impact on the group, on the fitness of the group, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's a, like turning all those things around, but it's not death, it's life, in fact. And that's the immune system.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the genes that's mutated at the highest rate in human populations is the HLA gene. And it's mutated by gene conversion. We have multiple copies of it.
Right.
And gene conversion gives rise to a recombinational assortment of diversities, so that in only 5,000 generations of human beings, we can hardly transplant, we can't transplant any organ from anybody in this room to each other. Right? We've got generated enormous diversity at that locus. Now, that actually has been selected for and has value. And the value it has is it diversifies our immune system.
Right.
So that some percentage of us, maybe two, maybe two people in this room, are completely resistant to the AIDS virus.
Right.
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 And that is in part due to the HLA locus. Not, not really. It's actually due to another locus, but it could be due to the immune response that you have. Right. It's the reason these unfortunate 100 cheetahs died in Arizona. They didn't. They got susceptible to one virus. And the whole and one virus killed the whole group, right? Because they were all inbred from two brothers and one sister, essentially. So this is a great example of group selection. It's beneficial to the group rather than poisoning your mutant partners here, and it is done to allow a small percentage of us to survive if we're exposed to something we've never seen before. Like the AIDS virus, right? And that diversity turns out to be a very good thing for the fitness of the group.
Right.
Like one individual, you could say, is one or lost.
Right. So what you're saying is that in some cases, diversity is important, right?
Yes.
And we can think of situations where... so what I would say is that that kind of thing is very important when you have extremely fluctuating environment. So this could be a solution to many of these problems that, in fact, the guy who made most probably the best set of arguments for group selection, I would say, was Russell Wright, okay? Who sort of thought about these things happening not in a big vat where everybody is being mixed and replicator dynamics going, but little subpopulations. So if you get distributed in many, many little subpopulations, then of course we have we could have fixation of mutations in different cases. And then there will be a far more dynamic situation. What would happen is that some would be altruistic, some would not be, and you get a very mixed type of situation, right? So there it is not absolutely true that if you mix them together, what would happen? It's just that in each pond you get a different story, right? And that could be very dynamic. And so that's one possibility, that it's not a universally stable solution. But we just found it because many times you actually manage to survive it, right?
But, I mean, there is a little bit. I mean, there's the example that you give that you may have selection for diversity. This is a little less hard to explain than something like, for instance, with these dicotyledon cells, where some of them really give their lives up for other ones, right? So.
Yes.
It's not that your fitness would go up if you would do less gene conversion at the HLA locus, right? You don't know. It's just generally good for the population as a whole to be diverse.
Right.
It's not that some have to pay for this. Whereas in these examples that Anirvan was discussing, it's actually harder because some guys have to pay for other ones to. Right, so some people go join the army, right, and go to Iraq, and other people think, maybe not such a good idea. Right? And so maybe they'd be good for the whole population that some people do that, but for those people it's definitely bad. So the question is, how do you keep it? How do you keep the population from evolving into a state where nobody would ever want to join the army?
Even if it is bad. I mean, look, I think this sort of absolute thing against group selection is crazy. I should be able to take each model, put it on reasonable footing, and see what happens to it, right? Rather than, you know, a total sort of throwaway thing. But yeah, it could actually be that we are unnecessarily beating ourselves in the head, but it's an extremely dynamic situation, that nothing has to be absolutely evolutionarily stable. But I think soon, somebody or the other, okay, would do a screen of all the apoptotic mutants in yeast. And it would be a good fun example to take each of them and pass it through this filter to figure out, you know, whether they are really stable or not.
Yeah. Can I address this question? So would you predict that if you took amoeba from two different genetic backgrounds, and put them together, they would make more spores and less stalk than amoeba from two identical genetic backgrounds?
So actually someone tried to do some experiment like that. They did not mix two stalks. They took soil amoeba.
Right.
And then they had markers on each of them. So this is some experiment from Rice. So I can't remember the name. Wasserman and somebody. Okay? So, and the strange thing is that the spores seem to be very homogeneous, okay, in the markers. Now, of course, they said evolutionary cheating going on. Some guy has taken over. Now, is this true? I mean, is it that it's not clear to me that it means that somebody had an advantage, right, to become the spore. It could be that somebody gets to the head and divides. Right? So homogeneity for itself doesn't prove that there are bad guys in there who will actually take advantage of the...
Except that there ought to be over many spores a statistical distribution if it's just randomly got the...
Right. So if you make it many times over, you should be able to see that. Right. But in one stop, maybe this is what happened. Yeah.
So, I'm sorry, I missed the whole check was but
you have 20 minutes for me to go over it again.
But the thing with that can be stochastic, right? You can imagine that the spores form with some probability, right? Common to the whole population, but yet you're maintaining phenotypic diversity, even though you are group selecting on the genotype.
If you are saying that without changing your genotype, you could, for the time being, be of one kind, and I'm sure in many cases there are switches of, right, that a subpopulation is always ready to take advantage, although they grow slowly. Okay? That's most probably true. That posits no evolutionary problem, because after all, it's the same genotype. Right? If you have something of a different genotype that's trying to take advantage, being stable to that is harder. Right? If you can stochastically switch back and forth between, I like to be sports, I like to be stock safe, then everybody gets democratic chance to be that way.
But there's still something to select, the probability of being one of those.
Right. But that's one species that's being selected, not two species.
Correct.
Right? Or rather, you can compare it with somebody who doesn't switch very easily. Right? So then that's true. Right.
But I mean, for this particular,
it doesn't seem like this problem is that much different than individual cells in a liver, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Meaning that
as long as you have enough intercellular signaling,
right,
like you would in a bacterial biofilm,
right?
You can imagine that you just, if something goes wrong with one of them, you get a cancerous growth or whatever the bacterial version of what your bacteria is.
Right.
Then you kill your whole population, and you, the same way you die if your liver gets.
Right. So it seems like we have taken the option of lowering the probability of that to as low as possible, so that we can hopefully carry over to the next generation. Because for us, what seems to be happening is that all of these are additional variables that you have to integrate out, and you just consider finally how your germline fits. Right. So it is not the survival of the individual liver cell, right? The individual liver is not going to propagate after I die.
But I mean, right? It would, in the sense that it would regrow and put some liver cells out and put it somewhere else.
But that's not how we are growing, right? Meaning, what would most probably grow is my children's liver, right? So it's important is what the fitness of the germline is, rather than of the liver cells are.
So you're saying the germline plays...
You can do population dynamics of that, but you cannot quite ask whether this is an evolutionary stable strategy or something. The evolutionary stable strategy is the whole thing being propagated to the next generation. Right? It's not the survival of the cell.
Okay.
Right. So if most of my body have apoptosis, but I can you know, go on to the next example. Anyway, sorry, there it was.
Yeah, so this particular example, right? If mm-hmm. So I just want to come back to, okay, so what's the answer for this? We know from yesterday that, or at least I learned yesterday,
right.
that granny yeast
right.
starts producing daughters that are no good, right? That have all kinds of chromosomal errors.
Right.
And so now, as we've seen, the age distribution in one population, mm-hmm. namely the ones that have apoptosis turned mm-hmm. off, is shifted towards a higher average age
right.
than the right. young yeast.
Right?
And so if you look at the average fitness
right.
of the two populations,
yes.
you have to average it over the age
Absolutely.
Classes.
Right. So average population of those guys are lower. Right? So this is why those guys try to argue, maybe this is one way out. But they have in total number, they have a far greater number. So that, okay, it's even true of hawks and doves, okay? That the average fitness of hawks or hawk solution was very bad, okay, compared to the old dove solution,
mm-hmm.
right? But in terms of total numbers, one took over the other, okay? So it could be average fitness is low, but if you have a bigger number, if in every category you can have a larger number of the other.
When I say average right. fitness, I mean the average number of viable offspring produced per individual
right.
of that type.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And so that is an average of the age group.
Yeah.
Right?
So I agree if the mutant for some reason, okay, makes less viable offspring.
But we know right. it does. We heard yesterday, right?
Well, no.
No.
The question is, is there something additional about
right.
mutant, or if it's, I think what is shown is that if it's strictly a function of age, then you cannot get better fitness.
Right.
If the
growth rate minus death rate, okay, has the same ordering still at each age. Right?
It doesn't, right?
Oh, but then it is this situation where the mutant already has a fitness disadvantage. Okay? Then if I grow it in a different bottle, it will die, okay? Right? So if this is the solution, then you have to say everything that knocks out castrates, okay, somehow screws things up.
But in the mutant, more guys are sitting in the age group that have bad numbers of
offspring. But actually also in the model, more guys are sitting even in the young age, okay? That is the part that is not very clear, right? So I should write down this equation, I'm sure.
Yeah,
okay?
So as long as it's higher everywhere.
Yeah,
the problem is higher everywhere because I'm talking about the average of the population.
Right. So the average of the population doesn't see that. Average in the population had actually divided out by the total number, and it is indeed skewed to bad, horrible things. Right. But anyway, look, we can. I'm sure there are end ways of poking holes, and I very much like people to poke holes in it. But we can discuss this. Yeah.
One more question about this. Okay, so basically, suppose I consider a population of pure genotype where
right.
every individual has the same exact same genotype.
Right.
But then the phenotype is a probably small p probability of some phenotypic switch.
Right.
Okay, in a bad
yes.
condition.
Yes.
Now suppose there are two strains. One
right.
has probability p1 of the phenotypic switch.
Right. Right.
And the other one has probability p2 of the
right.
switch.
Right.
Then I see it as a battle between the strains. Two strains with two different P1 and P2.
You can very well do
right?
that.
You can
right.
imagine that a battle between these two
right.
strains. And the point is that whichever strain wins out is the strain that sits on that optimum of the curve.
Yeah.
So the phenotypics, there's an optimum for P, little p.
Yeah. There's
one population wins, and it wins, and the population that wins is the one that has P star.
It depends on the condition. It depends on exactly how the fitness conditions work
sure,
out.
But
right.
And
some conditions
are right. If I do battle with the whole range of P1 through PN and continue in this switch, there'll be one population that wins and it'll be the one with that P star, the optimal P. And that's going to be like, it'll look within your experiments like some, you know, like the switch, like this thing where some of them die and some of them don't.
No, but actually, look, at least in East, if it was a mutation
yeah.
or it was just a switch, you can tell. Okay, so for example, you can take somebody who came up, you can sporulate that, you can take the haploid, that cross to the wild thing, and then see when they sporulate whether they separate 2 to 2, right? That or in some funny way, right? And you can figure out whether these are mutations, right? And you can actually then try thinking about where they are, but, right.
I have a background question
right.
for these fours
right.
for me.
Yeah.
So the spores.
So you're asking me about the superfluous thing? No. No.
Yes. So wait, the spore is forming in the stress condition.
Actually, they delay the spore formation. They send out toxins to their brothers, kill them, eat their stuff. Okay? And then form spores a little later when they become like solid things, no talking with the rest of the world. Okay.
But how many cells? So is there in the stress mutation, they come together, right?
So it most probably somewhat local, but you know, I'm sure if you mix the whole thing, there will be lots of toxins everywhere. Okay. If it is equally spread out, it doesn't really matter.
Once they meet, they don't divide anymore. Or they do.
Well, the point is that its chance of making to the spore level is slightly better, right? So again, if you had a mutant that always did that, not only a subpopulation, that were the killer mutant, right? Then it would be able to wipe out everybody else, right? Okay. But, okay.
Does yeast have a checkpoint mechanism?
Many. Which is a checkpoint for what?
For this, when you remove yes? The apoptotic locus.
When you remove, I don't know. Checkpoint means that it will stop dividing. Most of them are not most probably dividing under those circumstances. Not too much. If you get into serious nutrient constraints.
You said you can make a mutant that removes.
That doesn't die easily.
But it doesn't reproduce?
It most probably when it gets to the point where there's very little nutrient, it's most probably not good. I don't know, I want to know the answer to that. Okay? One can find out. See, most of the measurements is easy to do, death, growth minus death, then death. But I think in 9-day-old culture, I'd be very surprised, okay, if they are happily dividing on cells. I mean, most of them very few divide. Yeah, but...
I mean, can't you also induce it with hydrogen peroxide?
Yes, yeah. you can induce it with hydrogen peroxide. So you're saying that, okay, we can have a dividing cell situation, and meaning oxidative stress, superoxide stress seems to be a serious, serious, serious matter, and right, you could do it under different conditions. Right.
Just a general level, if you sort of think of a yeast colony as a unit, right?
Mm.
And everything seems to work out fine. Yeah.
So that was my locality solution. So, you know, it's known that in game theory, one way to do cooperation was yeast to do that, right? So again, if you disrupt the colony structure then you would see that they actually take over rather than crash back.
I doubt...
Nothing
with that was okay. I just mean that in the general world,
right?
You think of every yeast colony as
right.
Against each other.
Right.
Rather than, even if this outside strategy is not evolutionary state...
What if you get a mutant and then there is a sector site growing colony, right?
It's very well, no. I think it very well be that you have a colony which is altruistic,
mm-hmm.
and if you happen to have a caspase mutant, it takes over and it becomes...
Yes.
But that whole colony is not very efficient, so if it's completely
right.
The real world without
right. So roughly speaking, right scenario or somewhat similar to that, you know, there are these death of altruism here and there, but hopefully it's fragmented enough that it survives somewhere. I believe if you think about it, you can work out the equilibrium of that. My gut feeling is that it may not help you very much, because I know many, many people have tried to use this fixation to say, well, you know, if there's a slight treatment disadvantage, huh?
I mean, I agree with you that...
On the average, over many colonies, you still get many more bad guys than good guys in those circumstances.
Do you mean the mutation rate is too high?
Huh?
If the mutation rate is
sufficiently
low, so every now and then the colony will be...
We can go on and discuss, again, low mutation rate, you know.
Oh, you mean the mutation rate is too high, so you generate these too fast?
No. Okay, in the fixation scenario, the mutation rate is much lower than some threshold in number, so that most of the time it's population dynamics, stochastics in the population dynamics that decides whether you are all good or all bad, right? Once a mutation happens, you can wait till that equilibrates, okay? And then you go on. Okay, I'm not making sense.
I don't understand. What was the argument? So you have a bunch of bacterial colonies that are all in their own
cycle. So I have little colonies in which some things can come and go.
And altruistic
right?
Colonies are fitter than non-altruistic colonies.
Right. But because there's a transition rate, that any time altruistics get hit by something, they get decimated,
yes.
Right? There would be a balance.
Yeah.
Most of them would be non-altruistic colonies.
Right.
Okay, we can try to work out. Okay, but I think this is very good for blackboard arguments, and I don't want to hold everybody.
The other question, though, is you don't just need to maintain cooperation, you need to start it in the first place. And you don't just need to maintain altruism, you need to start it in the first place. And I think that's one of the places where it's even harder to see
how it actually generated. No. But those are worse questions, meaning when has evolutionary theory said how something comes about? It's the best, it can compare strategy one, strategy two, and see what happens. I mean, that's what they make their money on.
So I've got a closet. Go back to your equations, your equations that you gave.
Right, yeah.
How would they be modified by any of the alternatives
Okay, so I can show you one maybe various ways you can modify. Okay, so in this population, okay, what has happened is that the QI, okay, so take example one, which is that there is fitness deficit of some kind, right, at some concentration or some other. That means it's not quite true that this rate, okay, always under the other, doesn't matter what the substrate concentration is, right? So that's one way. Right? If you say that that it's not the higher death, the death rate cannot change order, but there is a toxin, right? That would effectively, as a function of substrate, reverse this order, and then it can happen. Right? If, for example, the transitions to aging was faster, okay, that can help you. Right? So that is like, you know, having effectively a fitness deficit. Okay? If you have locality, then what would happen is that the substrate would depend on the local density of X's versus Y's. So you can get clumps where there is more X, and good stuff that is secreted into the medium can go, okay, to help X's other than Y's. Okay, that definitely helps cooperation, right? So there are many ways you can sort of muck around with this. And this is not big deal. That's not big deal.
No, I'm just trying to identify where the altruism factor is.
Okay, so the altruism factor would be really, if we had that, well, it's in something like a box, like, I don't know, that if you could kind of jack up rather than these numbers being big players, sort of, you know, go to the octagonals in some way, okay, you would be able to. Look, we can write down and show, okay, how you can jack up altruism.
Can you just show me the equation again and tell me what each thing stands for in the equation?
Okay, right. Okay.
If I read this on a piece of paper, it works beautifully.
It's, okay.
So I don't understand the equation, I guess.
Okay, here. Okay, so QIJ, okay, is something. So XI is the number of guys at HI. I'm just going to say age. It could be any other index.
Yes.
Doesn't matter. Okay. QIJ is sort of like this quartic species type term, which is saying from J I hop to I. Okay. So I have a process by which I act to damage or age. Right. There is a probability.
Where's reproduction here?
Okay. So there is a QII term here, which is reproduction. Okay, I could have shot QII with tau I, okay, and made one term, if you like. Okay, this is some funny way of breaking that. What I have done is that QIIs, okay,
yes,
are kept the same on both.
But that's wrong. Mm-hmm. Because QII is the rate at which you produce viable offspring.
Yes.
And that for the mutant is lower because it produces.
No. I can always redefine things so that what I call 1 over tau, okay, takes care of that difference, right? So tau is not just death rate, okay? Tau is also lack of growth of viable things, right? But as long as, so I can break up the off-diagonal terms, okay? Maybe that's the best way of saying things. I have off-diagonal terms to be the same, but the diagonal terms, I say there is an order in between them, right? Okay? And I'm saying that any amount of substrate put in is not altering that ordering. Okay. Now, if you want to violate that, surely you can do it.
Yeah, by assumption, right, the rate has to depend on I, but not on whether it's X or Y. Right? It just has to depend on
I don't think we disagree. Okay, it's maybe we're calling it by different name. I'm saying once that happens, then things are explained anyway. Because what you said that every mutation causes, right? And I think what you're trying to say is that there's a systematic reason for which this happens. Right, so we can actually go over that and see whether that is the reason. That is why you are sort of saying this. Okay, but it's most probably much better to do it over blackboard than sort of run around with this thing. Right?
Well, I don't know. You're trying to convince us of something, right? And I'm just not getting it, I guess. So
okay.
What is QIJ? It's the rate at which type I is produced.
Shifts to IJ, right?
No. Because there is also reproduction, right?
Right.
So if it's shift, then there is also a negative term. If it's reproduction, then there is not a negative
right?
So let's be more precise about what it is.
So I think it's far better if I write that Tyj with I not equal to j. Yes. Then there will be a term which is diagonal there, which will be negative, etc. Actually, it doesn't have to be negative because we divide, okay, side by side. So the other guy doesn't, you don't actually make it, okay. If there is a transition because of aging, there is a negative contribution to it, right? So Qii has all of those, right? Qii minus 1 over tau I is the full diagonal term, right? So I'm talking about the full diagonal term and their comparison, right? And then...
Right, but there is a problem, right? Because if, let's say you have young cells, and what they do is just every clock tick,
you know what?
They divide, and they're two young cells, and then every clock tick.
Okay, we'll go over that offline. Okay, I see where you are driving at, and maybe it's a semantic difference, and you might say the conditions I lay down is trivial because of that. Okay, so we can discuss that. I know what you're talking about. I think.
Okay. This may be just a different way of looking, but is there ever a case where higher fitness doesn't win?
In a trivial sense, if you, for example, have this kind of diversity being itself a valuable thing, and individually of higher fitness, you may have to, I think there is no reason to believe that we have to absolutely have individual fitness to be the God at whose altar we should pray, okay? It's the whole dynamics that you should look at, but you cannot quite say that if a particular composition of population wins over a particular composition of population, you have to ask yourself what are the mechanisms by which you could have disrupted it and whether it is stable to that. Right?
Yeah, that's all. It does seem to me that you have to have, in effect, multiple basins of attraction in order for this to be built. Because otherwise it just goes to a steady state. That's the result of
structure
of the equation. Are you asking if the QIIs, you're saying the QIIs aren't the same in those two?
I don't know. I mean, I would like to discuss these equations here because I don't understand.
Right. So I think it's a very good idea.
There's a problem. Right. I don't see why there's a problem.
No. So we'll do that.
If the QIIs are the same, then
it's an artificial breakup. Okay. I could have.
Not artificial, but this constraint is only applies.
Yeah. But that's how I've written it. Okay. Look, it was foolish of me. I invented it last night. Okay. You're not arguing with me that if I is not equal to j or j is not equal to I. Okay. I vaguely some right to assume that they are the same. Of course, it may not be true, but
because young because cells with apoptosis,
okay.
I mean, they divide, whereas the other ones, they get older, right? Yes. So the ones that have apoptosis, they never get old because they will either die or they will split. They don't go to the older age process.
We have to figure out whether I'm sort of calling that a situation where it's already this mutation is already causing a fitness disadvantage.
If you're
saying that, then I think we're in agreement. I think it is. That this, if you say a caspase mutant by itself causes a fitness disadvantage, if you had never seen any other East type, okay, caspase itself would grow slowly or die faster or something, okay, the population, the viable population, if you look at them, right, then there is no problem, right? Okay, if you're saying every mutant causes that, then we have a solution. That's one of the solutions, right? If you have a mutant that in no other way suffers, okay, but only screws up, okay, death, right, then we have a trouble.
You guys aren't disagreeing.
Yeah, okay. I agree.
I'm saying we agree.
He's looking at like 10 conditions where there's a solution, and one of them is the one that you agree.
That having that Q fixed for both guys is making the inherent assumption that the birth rate is the same for the mutants and the regular guys.
Yes.
You're saying what happens if the birth rate is worse for the...
Given
in some way, right.
They're the same age.
But that was, by construction, not allowed in his model. Does he have...
Yeah.
He assumes the birth rate is the same.
As long as the birth rate versus the minus death rate minus Qij, so we can, all the diagonal terms I take it the same. At each age, have the same ordering.
Yeah.
Okay. Now you are saying that the ordering is not the same. Okay. You are saying that actually in some way it's lower, right?
I don't think I'm actually saying that.
Okay. But let the people who are sort of tired of this go. But I really like to fight it out. Okay. So you're excused, but anyway. But let me write down the equations, and then, of course, I don't think there's any doubt. If I set Okay? If I shove all of the diagonal things in Q into tau, I define that to be tau. Right? Okay? Then what I said is that. Okay? If I have equal population.
There's a question about sort of mass balance here too.
Okay, look, I said, okay, you can tear yourself from the trouble, now it's not my problem anymore. Okay, so let's take mass balance.
Just taking something very simple. Let's take two age groups.
Absolutely.
You have a young and an old guy, and one guy never gets old, always divides, and the other guy...
So look, the right-hand side, if I wrote it this way, XJ, these are all the hopping trucks, right? Okay, that is fine. There is some balance, as you said. Some of, I guess, CJI, some over all, I don't know which way it is, some over all J, from there S, right, minus, right? There is sort of a growth term, R of S, and then there is, okay, a death term, right, G of S and I, right? Now, so these parts are the same, because I assume all the diagonal cubes to be the same, right? So this is really the RI minus DI. Okay, that matters. That could be different in different groups, right? If I assume there's certain ordering between them, then there is no way you're going to win. Okay, you can show. Now you can argue that, you know, that ordering is what is satisfied, and that still doesn't mean that the YCA mutant is not, it is, okay, not. I mean, I think that translates into YCA being less fit than the other.
Yeah, but I mean, okay, so you're assuming that these apoptotic cells,
right,
have the same rate at which they go to the older age class as the other. But if you look at one cell, right, it either divides and then now it goes back to the young class. Because when it divides, you know, you always go back to class zero, right? Because you're young when you're,
right,
or at least, right?
Yeah.
Whereas,
So I can actually, so the QIJ is definitely generating. Okay, so it's not exactly that conservation condition, because, right?
Right, so, right. I mean, but right, it's really the devil is in the conservation, that every cell, right, it either divides, it gives rise to two cells, or it becomes older, and you can only do one of the two, and those two, they have to sum up to the right thing, right? So if you're changing the balance in one way, then some cues have to shift somewhere else, and they can't always be the same.
So I thought I was saying something so trivial, okay, that it's almost... Okay, it's not worth saying. Maybe you agree. But the thing is that, okay, so maybe I should sort of talk and straighten out exactly how, why, under what condition this doesn't happen, okay, and why I think if in my mind, saying that there is no cell-specific toxin, or there is no additional fitness deficit, okay, that corresponds, okay, to getting this mutation, I think that in that case I'm saying this will grow. Right? And whether that word actually translates to what exactly you are saying, what I'm saying, is something you can work out. Okay? So I'm very happy to do that, because I definitely need to convince someone like you. Right. So look, we can do this.
Sure, I'm sure. Yeah. So I guess it doesn't matter.
It does matter. Okay. Right. I think what you are, when you have that scenario, I call it that the Casper mutant has a fitness deficit.
Yeah, but see, the definition of fitness is, that is such, you know, if you say it has a fitness mutant, it has a fitness deficit, it means it's not going to win in the long run, right? It's almost
tautological then.
Right, yes.
Right. So, okay, I'm just saying that if you had a situation and you had an age structure, that age structure per se is not going to solve the problem. Maybe that's what I'm trying to say. Okay? If you calculate, if you define your fitness, you see in each category what the growth rate and death rates are. Okay? But we can.
Yeah. Did we actually let you finish?
Yeah, I was finished long time.
We can thank anyone and continue.